Charles, explain if you can again what a shock cocoon is and how it works.
Yes. We really don't know exactly how a shock cocoon works. There was one stairwell B in the North Tower on September 11th where it's one of the largest we've ever seen. It was actually a situation in which probably one piece of metal that was aimed in just the right direction. These shock cocoons form usually in situations where there is incredible force involved, which certainly there was in when you're looking at significant fractions of the Hiroshima atomic bomb being expended on New York City. And so you had this one stairwell where a piece of metal aiming up in just the precise angle might have been enough to just diverge the waves, almost as the prow of a boat diverges, you know, sends the water moving off, throws it off to starboard and to the port side, or as the nose of a supersonic jet will just that one point pushing through and causing the forces of the air to actually diverge around the plane. 16 people surviving in the stairwell B shock cocoon. If you imagine that somewhat as the fuselage of a supersonic jet that is aimed up, and somehow it behaved that way in much the manner as a karate strike going through wood or cinder block. It's actually a dividing of the forces that's able to cause that wood or cinder block to crack, and the hand continues through. And so that is the kind of physics that we think is involved. Two of the people who were actually two of the survivors who were shock cocooned near a one at the South Tower, one very right actually in the footprint of the South Tower and within the collapse column, they said, they asked me, what is a shock cocoon? How does it form? How was I saved? And I told them, well, basically you guys are our black boxes who survived in these shock cocoons, and our clues as to how they form, this is how we think they formed around you. One of them said to me, you know, I think I was saved by a power higher than your physics. I really cannot, that maybe my physics, you know, gives an explanation of how it might happen, but also he felt he was saved by a higher power. He said this in 2001, in fact, and that there was something he was meant to see or observe or do, he said. Well, both of these guys, they said just about the same thing, one of them being a Port Authority police officer, Robert Vargas. And months later, there was this hoax that emerged. And by chance, my transect, the archaeological transect along Liberty Street at Ground Zero, went right through the fire truck, which was a truck called Four Truck, Ladder Four.
Ladder Four, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And the author of the hoax has been forced by the scientific evidence to admit last year that it was, in fact, a hoax. He's never made a public statement to that effect.
Well, now, this was about the nine heroic firefighters.
Right.
And there was some kind of a stupid rumor that they were not there trying to protect people. They were stealing blue jeans or something
right,
like that. Right,
right. There was
okay.
a story
Ludicrous.
That their truck, when it was discovered, was stuffed, the cab of the truck was stuffed with blue jeans, which because there was the closest thing to an archaeological transect in that place of chaos over those months, it was all filmed by FEMA and photographed on 35-millimeter film. The excavation of the truck took a couple of days. It was actually discovered on the birthday of my two twins. So, you know, at one point, we were accused of falsifying digital video and all the information I let out, and I said, anyone can check the date of my twin's birthday, and you guys watch too many episodes of CSI. Everyone in reality uses 35-millimeter, and video digital is just a backup. And I said, and there are datable events, like the children's birthday party. That's one of the things that brought about a confession.
Were you being accused of part of the hoax?
No, I was. No. Those of us who were debunking the hoax were being accused of falsifying the evidence that debunked the hoax. I mean, the comments that came out were just just, I remember over the last couple of years seeing them echoed with other things that have been out, like President Bush's papers that he was supposedly AWOL that turned out to be falsified papers, and same exact comments came out about the Ladder 4 hoax. Well, it was the evidence for the Ladder 4 crew was falsified, but the story should have been true. Same exact comments that we were running into. But the fact is, part of the evidence, even one piece of the jigsaw puzzle that fit in, excuse me,
sure,
was when Robert Vargas, a shock cocoon survivor, had said before the hoax ever emerged, he gave a description of seeing these firefighters working one of the South Tower elevators with their very distinctive Hurst cutting tool, the Jaws of Life.
Yeah.
And those men, the seven men who were with the cutting tool, and the other two we also found, and we can trace their steps. In fact, four crew was the one crew that had clear communications that were recorded and was within clear line of sight contact with people who survived right up to their very last second of life. That crew was found actually down-blasted, collapse-columned, six stories underground with the elevator bank, with their Hearst tool. They were, their helmets were found, their DNA was found, mm-hmm. the Hearst tool, their boots were found, and their DNA. You know, we're talking about forces ranging up over 3 tons per square inch that carried them and outside the building their truck six stories underground. The fire truck was compressed so to a point that the truck itself was in most places no higher than knee high or waist high. These guys, the interesting thing to me was when Robert Vargas and also Captain Paul Mallory had said in advance of the hoax that they felt that they were meant to see something or observe something, a higher force than my physics had saved them.
Yeah.
And as it turned out, they were two of the witnesses whose earlier documentation of the shock cocoon events out of a volcano study, a study in volcano physics, had added to the vindication of that fire crew.
Almost as if
there
was
not a shadow of a doubt that these men were working the South Tower elevator bank. Two of the women they cut out of this crashed and burning elevator, which had actually been shot like a shotgun shell through the elevator bank, went down toward the ground when Flight 175 hit the South Tower. And testimony to the construction of those emergency flywheels on that elevator that anyone survived. And they were actually taken, these two women, to ambulances and rushed out of there by four crew minutes before the South Tower collapsed.
Ironic that Vargas would live to vindicate firefighters. It's almost as if there was a purpose here.
Yeah, those are the sorts of things that I still, you know, I'm still a doubting Thomas, so I still say, okay, here's, especially in Vargas' case that he survived in the first place, is about a 1 in a billion probability. It's the sort of thing that I don't think has happened more than once or twice in the entire history of our civilization. The way he survived from one shock cocoon moving into another over the course of about 3 seconds.